Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of A Cast to the Past, a retrospective into the games, the movies, the shows, and the events that impacted our lives, for better or worse. They can be anything from the movies that spawned in the 80s, and we were born in 1989, so technically we're 80s, but kind of 90s kids, because I know Keith is going to correct me.
No, you're not. If you were born in 1989, you're a 90s kid. I'm sorry.
Legally speaking, though,
you're not, but... Okay, if you were born in 1989, you got 365 days of the 80s at best. What do you do in the first 365 days of your life? Normally just poop, pee, and vomit, right? You're not going to remember anything. So
that sounds like a pretty good time,
it's
though.
It's a pretty good life for most, I assume. But
that sounds like one after Cheesecake Factory. Yeah, right?
We'll get to that story later. I'm not done my point. If you were born in, like, 1989, I would even go as far as saying, like, late 88. You are a 90s kid. You experienced life in the 90s. It bugs me so much when people say that.
I will concede to Keith on this point, considering I had less than 6 months of existence in the 80s. So, you win this one.
Darn, I was born in 1989, September of that year. So, Keith, fine.
We're all 90s kids. Yes.
So, that being said, a lot of stuff came out in the 80s that we watched, but it's probably like 94, 95. We're going to be talking about the games that came out during our childhood, from Super Nintendo all the way back to maybe a couple of years ago, and even stuff that came out in the early 2000s, because people, I know that this is going to make us all sound very, very old, but the year 2000 happened 18 years ago. So just think about that when talking about the show. Retrospective can cover a bunch of stuff. Ugh. Yeah, Keith, I know it's very difficult.
It's weird to think about, like, if you were a Y2K baby. Let's sink in for a second.
Y2K baby.
Then you're like, you can legally drink in some parts of the world. That's so weird.
Yep. Time flies by, man. But in a couple episodes ago, we published the very first one, and it feels weird. Episode 2, which is this one, and I'm talking about a couple, because we have the .5s, which are the episodes that happen the weeks between the lengthier conversations. So our first official episode was dedicated to The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. Obviously, that inspired the name of the podcast. We also have an episode dedicated to some of our favorite games from the Super Nintendo and some of the 90s trends, because The Matrix did come out in 1999, and Ryan is going to give us a little bit more information about that in just a couple of seconds. But we also had great actors, you know, talking about your Robin Williams, Adam Sandler. He used to be in good movies, and those happened in the 90s. So we talked a little bit about that, as well as Keith mentioned Y2K, the end of the world as we know it. We did not feel fine in the 90s because people were obsessed with that. I did it. I got to reference it. I tried. I'm very proud of myself. And speaking of myself, I'm Juan Velas from San Juan, Puerto Rico. We have Keith Poshuk from London, Ontario. Ryan McNulty from Boston, Mass. Guys, you ready to talk about some Matrix in slow motion?
Oh, I can't wait. I have a feeling this one's going to be a controversial episode after going back and watching The Matrix.
It's definitely going to be an interesting one, that's for sure. And I can dive right into a description of the movie. So this was directed by the Wachowski brothers, and as Juan said, came out in 1999 and was a sci-fi film starring Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, Carrie Ann Moss, Hugo Weaving, and Joe Pantoliano.
You can get it. Pantoliano. let's go with that.
Awesome. So this movie presents... All right, Keith, did you want to make a point?
No, I just said that.
You want to interrupt my description, maybe?
I just wanted to congratulate you on your close enough with Pantoliano.
Yeah.
Apparently, I got it better than you. All right. Before Keith so rudely interrupted my
description. All right, keep going.
Like
me.
I mentioned, it's early. It's early. Okay. So, the movie presents a future where the world we live in is actually a simulation created to manipulate us humans, and our actual bodies are used as a source of energy. The man known as Neo, played by Keanu Reeves, is a hacker that uncovers this truth and is sent to be destroyed by the machines as a result.
So that's the synopsis, right? So to summarize, we are humans, but we're also batteries. So the entire concept of The Matrix is that... this takes place in supposedly 2199, they say in the movie. This is the context of the real world, because the real world is not the one that we're in right now. All of us, the three of us, everybody listening, everybody watching, this is a vessel developed by machines to keep us distracted so they can use us as batteries to keep fueling themselves so they can keep taking over the world. And then Keanu Reeves, Neo, that you mentioned, he's like the top of the line hacker. And he learned about this thing called the Matrix, except he didn't really know about it, you know, but he had heard of it. So we have the machines effectively go out to try and kill him because he can be the one. He doesn't know that he's the one. But Lawrence Fishburne, aka Morpheus, I mean, he is obsessed with this man, and that's what this movie is all about. So I was super excited when we decided to talk about this movie. And based on Keith's mild reaction before we hit the record button, I feel like I'm going to be highly offended of this. Also, towards the end of the episode, we do have a couple of your comments from social media. Don't forget, you can follow us, Acast of the Past, across all social media. You can also email us over at acastofthepast@gmail.com. So my question for you guys first is, did you watch the movie when it first came out? Because contrary to A Link to the Past, I mean, this is 1999, so we definitely could have watched this the moment that it came out. Did you?
I've seen all three of the Matrix movies. I believe I watched them around the time that they came out. I didn't see any of them in the theater, but I had fond memories of the Matrix, especially the first one, and then the car scene in the second one, at least. But I'm not going to lie, going back, this movie's kind of lame. Like, even the description that you just said is like, that just screams to me the ultimate edgelord fantasy. Like, oh, I'm a computer hacker, but I have a greater purpose. It was really, really tough to go back and watch this movie.
So for me, I didn't watch it in theaters, but I'm pretty sure I watched it not too long after it came out on video. I remember going to Blockbuster with my family, and we were looking for a movie to watch, and we were right by The Matrix, and it must have been pretty early after it came out, because when a movie recently came out at Blockbuster, they had like 5,000 copies of it up on the shelf
at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think we were there, and there was a guy who just happened to be near us, and we were looking at it, he's like, yeah, you should watch that movie, it's excellent. So we ended up picking that up, and I watched it. And it blew my mind, honestly. It was kind of the first movie to really blow my mind as a kid, to make me think, like, what if everything around me isn't what it seems?
Were you an edgelord, Ryan?
No, but I'm saying, like, it kind of opened your mind to think, hey, maybe everything you see isn't what you think it is. You know what I mean? And to kind of just have that different feeling, kind of like almost like an existential crisis or something, not to that degree, but just kind of make you think about the world in a little bit of a different way. So I really, really enjoyed it as a kid.
I was in the same boat. I think I saw it in the movie theaters when it first came out, because my brother and a lot of people were fascinated by it. Like, we didn't watch it the day that it came out, but I think that was the big deal with the movies back in the day, because there wasn't any word of mouth. We didn't have Rotten Tomatoes, but if somebody said, hey, you got to go watch this movie, I think word of mouth really was the key factor that made this movie what it is. And then when I sat down and watched it, much like what you said, Ryan, it's this whole what if scenario. More so than presenting itself as a movie, it's presenting a possibility. What if everything around us is not real?
What if I told you? Getting throw that meme in there.
Yeah, what if I told you? Yeah, I mean, it spawned memes before memes were a thing, if you really want to think about it.
And not only that, but I guarantee you this movie is directly responsible for black trench coat sales going through the frickin' roof.
Oh, yeah. Hot Topic owes itself to this movie and everything else that came out afterwards, because it spawned a lot of things, and we'll talk about the legacy components of this movie towards the end of the show. But it is worth pointing out, this is 1999, so we talked about this in the 90s trends episode, where, you know, we always had this hypothetical Y2K scenario, but here it is. We're just a couple of months before the year 2000. So the movie came out in the perfect time period, and a bunch of other stuff came out that, as I kept looking, 1999 was a really big deal in the world of entertainment. So, Mr. McNulty, can you bring up a couple of the other things that came out that year?
Yeah, so in 1999, some movies that came out, Office Space, a big personal favorite of mine.
Oh.
We got The Mummy, which is another movie I've seen a ton of times. Star Wars The Phantom Menace. Oh boy. Maybe we'll get to that one
someday.
I'm sure
that'll be an episode one day, and boy, will that be
Keith,
an episode.
Yeah or nay? I just want to get that.
Nay.
Okay.
Overall nay, like 20 yeah. minutes a yay.
American okay. Pie, which is something I actually saw not too long ago on TV. Man, that's definitely a sign of different times.
No,
some things
kidding.
That happen in that movie, you're like,
oof. That would not happen nowadays.
Yeah, that movie would not happen today.
But they made like 12 of them, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. They're probably still making them.
I remember
that
one
time
Levy's
got to get that money, boy.
Let's just say having a webcam in your room to record someone, that's not cool no more.
I'm going to say that wasn't cool back then.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But somehow it slipped by. Fight Club. Now that is definitely a classic that, I think still holds up today, but we'll see about that one.
You know, I didn't watch Fight Club until like 2010, actually.
It took me a very long time to watch that too, actually.
And I still haven't seen Fight Club. We should do that episode one day.
We definitely should.
Before we keep going, do you know about Fight Club? And I'm not mean talking. I'm actually talking about the movie. Do you know about it?
Not really. Like, I know the famous line, what happens in Fight Club stays in Fight
Unfortunately,
Club.
Unfortunately, that got spoiled for me.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea.
Before I ever got to see it, yeah.
Okay, so we gotta put that on the agenda sooner rather than later.
Definitely. Because that's also a movie I don't think I've seen bits and pieces. I don't think it's a movie I've ever seen all the way through, surprisingly. Like, I caught it on TV once and watched, like, the rest of it from where I saw it. But yeah, so definitely, it's overdue. Moving on to some games that came out in 1999, Silent Hill 1, great game. PS1 is a little rough around the edges, but still, I think that's a great game. Grand Theft Auto 2, so we announced we're going to be doing GTA 3 pretty soon. GTA 2 came out in this time. Pokemon Snap.
Great game.
How have they not made a sequel for that? That's what I
right?
want to know.
It's a travesty.
The Switch is made for that.
I mean...
You shut your mouth,
Pokemon... what? I said it's a travesty that they haven't made another one.
I thought you were talking about the game.
Shut up. Don't agree with me.
And I was just going to say, like, they kind of did in the way of Pokemon Go, if you turn on, like, camera mode, but another story for another day.
I apologize.
I accept that apology.
Age of Empires 2, Age of Kings.
I've played over 200 hours of that game. So damn good.
And then we had Crazy Taxi.
Offspring the game.
Yeah.
I still have never been able to get past maybe like 10 minutes of like that game before I lose. All right. Lastly, we got some music. TLC, No Scrubs. That's a classic.
No Scrubs.
We got Keith's favorite, Cher, coming out with Believe.
Okay.
Yeah. Because why not?
I was listening to your wrestling podcast and you made a Cher reference, so I figured I'd throw that in.
Okay.
What
did I say?
Anyway,
I don't remember.
I think it was
that.
Like Turn Back Time.
Oh,
didn't you?
Yes. I remember that.
If I could turn back time. No, keep going.
So we got Britney Spears' Baby One More Time. I mean, if we want to talk about like all time 90s songs. Yeah. That came out
in 1999, so barely a 90s song.
Still, that was a like huge song for that year. And then Christina Aguilera, Genie in a Bottle. Crazy to think that those both came out in the same year.
No kidding.
Because everyone kind of thinks of like Christina Aguilera as like, oh, she was like a year later, but apparently it wasn't that long. Oh, Smash Mouth All Star.
Yeah, you can.
Like, I mean, cannot. That is like a meme song.
Smash Mouth All Star
for the ages.
I find it so fascinating to look at 1999, especially from a music standpoint. Of you can really see what was popular just by going off of this list, like Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Cher, TLC. I guess kind of Smash Mouth. Like the world had their style of music that they loved, and it was just like how many different variations of that style can we put out and put to number one of the charts?
And I think there's something very similar to the Link to the Past episode in this one, because the reason that it's so important we give this context piece is that a lot of this stuff, people say the 90s, right? But when we say 90s, I think people assume like 94 to like 98. But look at this. This was towards the tail end of the year, kind of like A Link to the Past was in 1991 when it first came out in Japan, right? So very interesting when you look at this, it gives you different context about the times. Now, before we go talking about The Matrix, we actually went to social media. We're once again, Facebook, A Cast of the Past, Mr. Poster.
Yes.
Can you bring up some general impressions from listeners of the show that enjoyed this movie?
Absolutely.
Unlike you.
Hey, you know what? We'll get to that. But first, Gilberto Vega says, amazing movie with an amazing concept, taking the bore of everyday life and turning it into a futuristic fight for humanity versus machines. It's a subject often visited, but the surreal way that it's presented here is really mind-boggling. Us being enslaved by machines because they use us as batteries and keep us happy while being hooked up to a machine simulation. Brilliant. Yeah, you know, the concept of it is interesting. Execution, well. But Giovanni Rod... What? What's... Whew.
We'll get to it. Get to it.
But first, Giovanni Rodriguez says, The Matrix blew my mind when I saw it. Mind you this, when I was... Let me try that again. Mind you this... Third time's a charm. Mind you, this was when I was still a teen, and I swear I could not sleep after seeing it, both a metaphorical and existential levels. This movie was a total mind-bending for me back then.
I mean, it is true. Like, I think, like, these two comments sort of resume or summarize, if you will, like, what I really think about this movie, because... It's such a testament of a lot of movies to this day still question, you know, who we are, like what are we really contribute to the world? And The Matrix really was sort of the pivotal point when it became cool to talk about that, you know, on the big screen. And I guess we do got to talk about this because obviously Keanu Reeves, as we all know and love, became Neo, but that was not always going to be the case. Now, he was not the only actor that was considered to be somebody else at some point, but Keith, who was the original actor that was supposed to be Neo?
My understanding, it was supposed to be Will Smith, which is weird to think about how different this movie could have been. Because, like, if you look at roles that Will Smith was doing around the time, it was very comedical comedy roles, like your Wild Wild Wests and your Men in Black. Like, imagine having this movie with that tone in it, that non-serious tone. I guess, in a way... It all kind of came full circle with movies like I Am Legend, but I think it would have been a real shocker back then.
It would have been, it kind of would have fell in line with things like Independence Day. So, which you would think there would definitely be, if Will Smith was in it, there would 100% be more of a comedic twist to it. Just because even if it's a more serious movie, like Will Smith is still going to have that Will Smith sense of humor that he brings. Mm-hmm. Obviously, now he's done a lot more serious roles, so we could totally see it in a different light. But I think at the time, it would have maybe been a little bit of a distraction with Will Smith's like sense of humor being brought to it. Whereas like Keanu Reeves makes so much more sense as sort of just this kind of like empty vessel of
dry.
Like, mm-hmm. You know, like he's kind of just kind of a very low key actor that he can just be that sort of fish out of water that's just kind of learning everything as he goes. And he was kind of that perfect everyman that you could put yourself in the same perspective as him.
Exactly. And I think in the case of The Matrix, that actually works. The fact that Keanu Reeves has more of a dry read when it comes to stuff like that. If like you would have, when I say that it would have been more comedic, I think it would have been 100% in Will Smith's execution, where you would have certain lines of the movie that have become iconic in the way that Keanu said them wouldn't be taken as such. And that's really the part that brings the movie The Matrix all together, that whole everyman feel that I think would have been lost completely.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been the right fit, because I'll be talking about this and sort of what surprised me about the movie, but this is a very dry movie. More so than the actors, it's a statement. Because if you look at it, the actor Neo, or the character Neo, he's super dry. He's very neutral. There's not a lot of emotion behind him, aside from the whole thing where he's surprised, right? Like between the Matrix and the real world, he quickly adapts to it. And I feel like if you had somebody like Will Smith be involved, there would have been far too much personality, and it would have overshadowed the actual premise of the difference between the real world and the real world, quote unquote, if you will, that we're used to. So I'm very happy that that did not happen. And this is no knock against Will Smith. He's one of my favorite actors. And I mean, he's shown he can do comedy, but he can also do drama very, very well with a movie like The Pursuit of Happiness. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, hey. I think this is going to sound like a weird comparison at first, but I think the exact situation that we're describing right now, we saw in Suicide Squad from a couple years ago, where even though Will Smith was just a character in that movie, his acting overshadowed every single thing about that movie. Like, it was kind of like, Oh, here's everybody else and here's Deadshot over here. I think we would have seen a very similar situation with The Matrix, and it would have come off maybe a little bit more like Suicide Squad than it did the classic that The Matrix.
So, Ryan, because I gotta leave Keith to the last. I'm afraid of that part. What surprised you when we not only decided to watch The Matrix, but you actually sat down, you re-experienced it, having it watched back in the day? Did it meet your expectations? You know, nostalgia is a thing. We'll always talk about that. What do you think about it now?
So, I actually had not seen this movie all the way through since I watched it back in 1999 or 2000, whenever it was out on video. So it's actually been that long. Even though I love this movie so much, I'm just not the person to usually rewatch movies a ton unless I'm just sitting down and it's on TV. So going back and watching through the entire movie, the one thing the thing that surprised me the most was honestly how like breakneck the pacing was, and I actually appreciated it a lot. I felt like this movie was never slow at any point. Like, it's just, it keeps chugging along and doesn't spend too much time on anything, and I thought that was really good. Granted, they have so much to cover because you have to kind of go through the whole process of Neo discovering the Matrix and then, you know, having the kind of turning point where things go wrong and they have to save Morpheus and everything. So I really did appreciate that this movie was never slow. Like, if you ever thought they were going to spend too much time on a love story or anything, they didn't. And I thought that was excellent. Not necessarily something that surprised me, but obviously going back and watching a lot of the kind of slow motion and cool effects, like, A lot of it was kind of funny, right? You know, like the very beginning where Trinity does like the jump up kick. It's like, that is hilarious now, because just public perception now is that has been such a played out thing. And now it's just funny because like we're so beyond that now. It's kind of funny. And at the time, though, that was like the coolest thing ever. But so many movies have parodied it. And now it's like a lot of the action scenes are pretty funny. A lot of the kung fu stuff is so over the top. It's pretty hilarious. But I wasn't necessarily going to be surprised by that. But other than that, I thought it was very solid. And like I said, the only thing that really surprised me was how good the pacing was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, because Keith, once again, I'm saving your best for last, man. You're the climax of this piece right here. I was very surprised at how sort of modern the movie is, in terms of there's a lot of stuff that, as you mentioned, Ryan, we look at it now, maybe laugh, but this set the standard for a lot of the things that we would see over a decade to this day. A lot of movies are inspired by this directly, and I love the pacing. I think that's also to its detriment, and I would love to get Keith's thoughts about that later, because I feel like even though the movie never stops, it never has time to really soak anything in. So what I was surprised by is, like, as a kid, you don't really think about, well, dude, this is a big deal. You just learned that the entire world is fake, yet you kind of took you like 5 minutes to get over it. And now here you are learning Kung Fu, you're learning Jiu-Jitsu, all of a sudden you're doing all this stuff. How is your body even adjusting to this entire experience? You know, at some point, Morpheus says, like, you've never used your eyes before, you've never opened them. It feels like everything happens so fast that we never have a time to really analyze, or even the character is like, hey, what's really going on?
Sorry to interrupt, but I was going to say, watching the movie, like I said, even though I appreciated the pace and they would do some kind of fade outs to imply that time has passed as he's recovering from waking up in the Matrix, like watching it, I can tell that there's like a lot was left on the cutting room floor. Like, you know, I don't know if there is like a director's cut version, but it feels like after watching it, you can tell that there was one, like that there was a much longer version of the movie.
Yeah, I felt like this could have benefited from something like The Lord of the Rings, because for context, this movie has a runtime of 136 minutes.
It's a long movie.
It's a long movie, but it doesn't feel long. But it's because you can tell, as Ryan mentioned, you have to cut out so much stuff that you don't have time to breathe. I think a lot of movies do benefit from that downtime that lets you think about the previous scene. You don't get that in this movie. And I think like that's why we're not going to be talking about the second and the third movie that came out after this one, but I think that's a big reason why people don't talk about those movies as great as this one, because this one gives you a hint of things. The other ones just show you those things. And sometimes when you show something, instead of just, you know, insinuating and teasing
some things, yeah, some things are better left to the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So with that being said, Keith.
Yes. So
what you think about it?
When I went back to watch The Matrix, there was, I almost like started having a struggle halfway through the movie with myself, in the way that I really had to take a look at all of the things that The Matrix like set in place over the last almost 20 years and then judge it from that, because like you guys mentioned, it's such like a fast-paced action movie, and some of the stuff that we consider very lame today, like that Trinity kick or Neo dodging the bullets like this, like all of that was groundbreaking at the time, and I think you really have to give it credit for that. But the thing I just couldn't handle going back was how lame, even though there was just a little bit of it, the plot, the story, everything to me, it was such a huge miss. And it perfectly encapsulated why these movies, this one was great and the other ones weren't, in the way that they really leaned into that plot stuff and it just didn't work. To talk about just the first one itself, that whole stuff of like, oh, they say Neo's real name in the beginning of it, I can't even remember it, even though I watched it like 3 days ago. It's so forgettable.
Mr. Anderson.
Thomas Anderson.
Thank you.
They only say it once. Mm-hmm.
And then like, you get to this point so fast that, okay, his hacker name is Neo. That's his online persona. Now he's in this world where your online persona is now who you are. Morpheus's real name isn't Morpheus. It's probably like Richard Howard or something like that. But they're just so accepted that this hacker name that you've given yourself is who you are, that it's A-okay. And to me, it just seems like such this like fantasy, this online fantasy, especially in the concept of 1999 when the internet was still fairly young. Like, this was just everybody that grew up on the internet's fantasy. Like, I'm gonna get unplugged into a world where all of my computer skills matter and all of this hacking I've done is just going to make me the one, the savior. My name isn't Clarence, my name is Neo, my name is Hacker Star 420 or something like that. It was really
69.
It was really, really hard to get past that going back to it. And like you mentioned, Juan, how they just kind of barrel through the story. It did feel like it maybe should have taken a moment to really like go out and explore that more, because when you finally get to that moment in the movie where Trinity's finally like, I love you, Neo, it just seems so like blown over and they just kind of bulldozed right through it just to get back to the action. And that's where going back and watching The Matrix really fell apart for me. I still think the action is top notch and it just revolutionized action movies in a very good way. But when you just go, the plot is so lame. It's just so bad. bad.
I think it's like the coolest plot ever, but everyone's entitled to their opinion, of course. But I think kind of blowing through a lot of stuff and not leaving some things to breathe might have been best, as they're kind of like playing to their strengths, where I don't think you're going to get this like Oscar winning scene of Neo like, whoa, I'm in the Matrix, like, this is crazy. And the love story, like, if they tried to do too much with it, I think it would have been even lamer than it probably already was. So I think in that way, they kind of played to their strengths by just having this kind of breakneck pace of, I mean, they had a lot to get through, and they didn't want to have this movie be longer than kind of it was only a little bit longer than kind of the standard 120 minute movie.
I understand what you're saying there, but okay, so another example where I think that actually worked in this movie is developing the character of Morpheus. Like, you knew everything you needed to know about Morpheus before he showed up on screen, and all of that was being done during an action scene where you have Morpheus like guiding Neo through the office building and helping him out. Like, you knew Morpheus was this powerful, mysterious, all-knowing character, just like in the middle of an action movie. And they did that so successfully, but failed so hard on the other side, in my opinion, that it was very, it was jarring in the way that, like, oh, you did so well, but you couldn't follow through on this one. So that's more why I hate that whole plot line.
I see what you mean, because there was a build-up to when you finally saw Morpheus. Oh, that's the dude that we have been hearing about. That's the guy that guided Neo to escape the building, and all of those things that, when you got to the door, even Trinity's like, well, here we go. You know, here's the moment. Then you actually open the door. And I think that most of the other things in the plot of the movie, which, once again, I love this movie, but we are here to sort of pick it into different pieces, right? And we can't forget that. Everything else seems to pale in comparison to Morpheus, the character, and he's not even the lead. You know, he's like the leader of the pack, but we know the movie's about Neo and about the world. And another thing I feel we need to separate is that one thing we can talk about is The Matrix as a movie, but then the other thing is, what is The Matrix and the actual concept of The Matrix? So maybe just a couple of minutes we can talk about that, which is Matrix versus the real life. I think that, Ryan, you mentioned you like the plot, but what do you like more? Is it the entire concept of the movie, of Neo, how he discovers himself and the characters around it and the world and how they actually portray them? Or is it more so the concept of, this is the fake world, which is real to us, and he's being revealed the actual thing that is the real world, which we're being blocked by the machines to actually see?
I will admit, I think the concept of the movie is definitely stronger than the movie itself. And I think that's probably a reason it's like such a revered movie, is because it opened up a lot of people to that concept. So if you're kind of being introduced to that for the first time and it's really making your imagination go run wild, that's probably going to make the movie even more enjoyable for you. Whereas someone who's kind of familiar with this, like we all were going into it, now we're just looking at the movie for the movie's sake, and maybe it's not as strong in that light.
Yeah, I think thinking about the actual plot at the time, it is pretty groundbreaking, this whole idea of, oh, what if you know what you think is reality isn't actually reality, and it's just a simulation. It's really cool, especially, like I mentioned, when we're in the infancy of the internet, this world that's becoming more and more digital. They kind of just went like head first into that entire concept. And I think that's what really made The Matrix work back then.
Yeah. And then once you actually get to the concept of The Matrix is the fake world, but then there's like three different elements, because they present to us the real world, which is technically horrible, and that leads, you know, to sort of cipher the character. Yeah, because think about the fact that the real plot of the movie, and that's why I think a lot of people are critical, is not The Matrix versus the real world. The real battle is the Cypher character, which the moment that they introduce this guy to us, you can tell he's supposed to be the bad guy from his facial hair to his expressions. You can tell, like, hey, this guy is up to no good, and he's part of Morpheus's team. You know, once you actually talk about the red pill versus the blue pill, and I'm going to ask you guys, which one would you have taken in just a little bit. But once we are presented that, you know, Cypher says, hey, if I had known that the real world is so bad, I would have rather taken the other pill, just woken up. And then the movie changes because it's no longer about here's Neo trying to become the one. It is here's this bad guy that is very much like not even a secondary character. He's like number seven in the tier of things that are happening. And he's kind of trying to take over, but that doesn't even take 30 minutes into the movie for it to be solved. So this movie, and I hope I make myself clear, if The Matrix had come out in 2018, the first movie would have been a trilogy. I'm not saying Reloaded and Revolutions. This first movie would have been spread into three different movies. One talking about who's Neo, who's Keanu Reeves, you know, Mr. Anderson, and what is The Matrix. The second one would have been the discovery and the discovery of Neo as a character. And then the third one should have been sort of the last 30 minutes that we got of this movie. At least that would have been awesome for me.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And yeah, the Cypher character I thought was very interesting. And like you said, it does go very fast. I mean, the fact that it's like, oh, they, you know, Cypher kind of has his first big scene when he's talking to Neo when they're at like the computers or whatever. And then immediately following that, you're seeing it, they just immediately show him being like a betrayer, like talking to the agents and stuff. So I feel like they could have, that was one scene where it's like, okay, they could have spread those out a little bit. Cause it was just like, oh, you're starting to maybe consider liking this guy. And then they're like, oh, look, he's a bad guy. But I do appreciate that they made it very clear what the villain's motivations were, and they were very interesting and even sympathetic. Even the agents had an angle to them where you could see their point of view. But for Cypher, like you said, I think a lot of people could relate to that, where it's like, you know, we all see what the real world looks like in this movie, and it looks like it really sucks to live there, right? Like, they're stuck on a ship, there's machines everywhere, it's all like very bland colors, and you're just like, man, I wouldn't want to live in this world. So you do sympathize with Cypher in that way, where he has this regret that he wish he just stayed in the Matrix, because life just looks, even though you're this slave, it just looks like a more enjoyable life in a lot of
ways.
And
he's not wrong, because like the more he talked about that, I'm like, man, do I really want to see what the real world is like? Because this is kind of bad. Like, can I just wake up and act like this never happened?
Yeah, you know, it honestly doesn't sound like the worst life. You might not make a difference, but at least you live comfy.
Exactly. Yeah. So the next question for you guys is, which pill would you have taken? Because Neo is presented with the scenario. The red pill, that shows you the real world. You know, it allows you to sort of be pinpointed by their computers, so that way they can jack you off. Because that's what actually happens.
You couldn't just say unplug, like they could unplug you. No.
Did you really have
say
to
say I'm
going to
jack
that?
You in? So I'm being accurate.
Oh my god,
I'm being accurate. So they jack you off if you get the red pill, but with the blue pill, you wake back up and it never happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. Would you have I think taken? In this world, I think the blue pill leads to that most likely.
This episode brought to you by Blue Chew. Not really, but.
Oh my God. Not an actual sponsor, by the way.
No.
Would have been a perfect transition. What about you, Keith?
You know what? I have a beef with Morpheus on this one, first of all, where he really did not do a good job explaining what exactly would happen if you took that red pill. Just like, oh yeah, you will get to see things how they really are. Not like, oh, a mirror is going to come attack you and you wake up in a weird pod filled with liquid and you're gonna get attacked by a machine. If I would have known that, I think it would have really colored my taste there. Like, yeah, maybe the red pill sounds good, but I don't want to deal with all that. So I think Morpheus should have done a little better job explaining that, but I think at the end of the day I would have taken the blue pill. I'm good. I'll just go live in my simulation. I don't need to deal with all this. Take the blue pill.
Yeah. That's the thing. Even as an adult, I was like, wait a minute. So you're just randomly taking this pill. You don't know what's in it? Because I was thinking, so biologically, medically speaking, what does that actually do to me? You're not even asking. You're just like, oh, hey, Morpheus, I just met you. You're showing me two pills. I have no idea what's actually contained inside. I'll take the red one. Yeah, why not?
You and I haven't been to the same party.
Strangers. I would have taken the blue pill as well, honestly. The real world looks like horrible. I don't want to live there. I know they kind of expand on that world more in the other two movies, and you know what? It's still boring. Like, yep. the entire time for these movies, you're just kind of like, especially for the latter two, it's like, hey, when are they going to go to the Matrix again, where things are fun and cool? So yeah, I would want to live in the Matrix.
So the other part in the plot is that we've talked about the fact that Cypher betrays the group because he wants to be out of the Matrix. So the agents tell him, well, you give us Morpheus and we will do that. You know, we will coordinate in such a way that this never happened. You will never remember it. In that process, at one point, Neo meets the Oracle, which we can talk about later. And she says at some point, Neo's going to have to make a decision, you know, whether it's Neo, you know, risks his own life or Morpheus. Morpheus gets kidnapped by the agents and Cypher. And then it's a scenario of, well, now we got to get him, right? So, you know, we'll talk about the fight scenes. I know it's all over the place, but this movie truly is all over the place.
It really is.
What did you think of that last act in the movie that was very much a rescue mission? If anything, it was sort of going back to, like, you know, other movies from the 90s. Like, this last part was very much and almost nothing to do with the Matrix and more so to do with a rescue mission, almost like a Die Hard, almost like a Lethal Weapon or any other movie that we grew in, you know, and enjoyed watching growing up. Because here's a sympathetic character that we've always heard about, Morpheus. He's down and out. We got to come to the rescue.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty well done. Like you said, it didn't have as much to do with like the Matrixy stuff, but I mean, the fact that like Trinity is able to just like learn a helicopter, like learn how to pilot a helicopter on the fly, like I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, I think it still held up as like an interesting rescue mission, and even just like having that drama of like, do they just unplug Morpheus? Like, is it even worth it? You know, I thought it was really well done.
At the end of the day, it's an action movie, and you've been building up Neo in this way that, okay, now he knows Kung Fu and all of this stuff. So you need a reason for the action movie guy to do action movie things. And they built it up well, especially the thing that I really enjoyed most was the agents, in the way that they built up for the entire movie just how deadly and how capable these agents are. And you really didn't see it until the last half hour of the movie, starting at that helicopter scene. And they lived up to it. Like, Neo just didn't steamroll through one of the agent guys. Like, that scene that you remember him doing the bullet dodging, the part that I kind of forgot myself is that, like, hey, Neo got shot there. He didn't just fully dodge all those bullets. And that action was, like, well built up, and I think it did execute it well.
And then talking, I guess, more about the world of the Matrix, I think there's so many things about the movie that make it unique. For example, the dialogue. Notice Morpheus almost speaks like a Riddler. If Morpheus was a character in the world of Batman, he would fit right in, because it's the way that he talks. Like, you just mentioned the bullet dodging. You know, at one point, Neo asks Morpheus, what are you telling me, that I can dodge bullets? And then his response is, when the time comes, you won't have to. And it makes sense, because the Matrix in itself is not real, right? So you're not dodging anything. You're being made aware that this is not real. Therefore, you can manipulate the bullet itself.
Free your mind.
Yes.
Exactly.
And do you think that was one of the strengths of the movie, the way that was really portrayed? Because the fight scenes, the dialogue, a lot of the things that are not real, you know, the first jump when, you know, he doesn't make it the first time, but then you see all these agents doing it. You know, the fact that this is a fake world, if you will, allows the movie to sort of exceed the normal capabilities of a fight scene or even an emotional scene. Because, you know, Morpheus, you know, he sees Neo's about to be kidnapped. He headbutts an entire wall down.
Yeah, it's true.
That's pretty
crazy.
And
they do a good job of really following through with that, because even watching it myself, like, oh, there's this scene where Morpheus is in pain and being interrogated. Well, if he doesn't, like, if rules don't matter here, why doesn't he just like get up and just rip everything off and just go headbutt a wall somewhere? That part of me was kind of like, okay, I guess I have to suspend my disbelief a little bit. But by the time they got to the end of the movie where Neo really realized his true potential, it really was like, why don't you just do this? Why don't you just like carve him up into 1,000 pieces and digitally blow him away? And that's
fatality.
That's exactly what they did. It was a very good slow build up, even though the movie was just like balls to the wall action. It was a slow build up of Neo's potential and the character. And as you started asking more questions as the viewer of like, oh, well, why don't they do this if it's not real? They really followed through with that more and more as the movie progressed.
Yeah, I think they did a very good job of introducing like how the Matrix and everything works, because in that intro scene, you see like Trinity jump over the building and then the agent jumps along too. And like, the rest of the cops are like, how is that possible? And then you kind of slowly learn that basically once you wake up and you're able to go back into the Matrix, that you are able to manipulate reality and kind of bend it a little bit to your will. And then you see that kind of progression by the end. Neo, being the one, is like basically able to kind of like fully realize this more than anyone else and take advantage of it in a better way than anybody else. Like you see there's that shot where kind of like from his eyes, he sees all the code. So it's like he can manipulate that code, I guess, is what's implied. And that's how he's able to like stop all these bullets and basically go into Agent Smith and like break him apart. But yeah, the agents are another interesting thing we kind of didn't like go into too much detail about, and just sort of they're basically put in there by the machines to kind of stop anyone from
waking up
essentially, and to obviously stop the one who would be any type of threat to them.
I think that was a really, really big deal. And what you mentioned about Neo, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the pacing in the movie, but I think the reason it all meshes together is like, this is like Dragon Ball Z, and I'm serious, because Dragon Ball Z, a character gets down, but every time he gets back up, he's a little bit stronger. And you see that with Neo. You know, we go in the same movie from he can't make a jump to he goes inside the body of an agent and makes him blow up, all in the same movie. Why? Because he keeps learning. He understands what the Matrix is. And even though everything else was sort of not great looking back from a storytelling standpoint, that part itself, that was the main event. That was the reason that people went to watch the movie. This is not a romantic movie, so yeah. Was the Trinity part sort of an afterthought? Yeah, but then you saw in the second movie, they kind of went almost too deep into the romantic thing. We're not going to be talking about that here, but they did. And guess what? People didn't like that. So maybe the fact that they didn't focus so much on every other little element is the reason why this movie is as good as it was. And the other thing that we got to talk about is, as I mentioned at the beginning, there's three things. There's the real world, there's the Matrix, but then my favorite part is the construct training program. So they can just go into this white space. They can transport themselves anywhere. This is where if you learn jujitsu, you put it to the to practice. So my fun question for you guys is, say we're in this, right? I think this is the only actual benefit of getting to the real world. You can go to this fake world, which is kind of on the side. What would you do in that? You're given this free roaming space.
That's,
you can
great
do whatever
question.
You want. Keep it PG.
I don't know.
You can do anything.
Honestly?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough.
It's not a fun answer, but I just like learn languages. Like, imagine if I could.
It would take
just
you
learn,
like 5 seconds, though.
Yeah, I guess you would just
This is the PG version of Keith's imagination.
Yes.
I'm guessing.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, to do anything, like, you could just make all these simulation scenarios where you could, basically, I would turn it into a video game, like, just acting out video games, you know? Oh, you want to play some like Call of Duty or that Fortnite, as Juan would say. Like,
well,
you could,
Ryan,
basically just make a construct of simulation of that, where obviously you can not get hurt or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Or I mean,
he did get hurt though.
I'd go to space or something. Like, just throw me on a
rocket
ship.
Well, it's like you
ship.
Could. you could build it in a way to protect you. Yeah, you know what I mean? So I'd probably do things like that. You know, hey, let's make Super Mario Brothers real, like IRL. You know,
here's a question. You brought up Dragon Ball Z earlier. Isn't that construct training program just the hyperbolic time chamber?
Whoa. Wait a minute. Okay. We're onto something, because Goku is supposed to be the one. And this is like serious. It would not surprise me if the Wachowski brothers were inspired by Dragon Ball Z. There's a lot of similar elements. Talking about Goku in particular. Talking about Goku and then I guess Gohan, who they, you know, sort of, you know, passed the baton to. And I mean, Dragon Ball Z came out like what? 80s, 90s, like very, very early 90s. So
yeah, I think that actually makes a lot of sense. 90s in Japan. Yeah. But it wasn't super popular in America until probably the late 90s. But you never know. Like, they could have been inspired by it.
So what's the thing that you guys enjoyed the most about the movie? Maybe a particular scene, an overall tone?
So I have two answers. The thing that I actually really enjoyed, like genuinely, was the action, specifically that scene in the bottom of the office building with all the guns and like just shooting that entire place up. Just
tiles breaking.
Just the choreography and the thinking about everything that had to go through and had to happen in that movie just to make that work. I was super impressed by that scene. I think that's the movie or the scene in that movie that stands out the most, that like people don't talk about enough. That scene was great. And then the one that I really enjoyed for all of the reasons why I'm talking about why this movie doesn't hold up for me is that scene at the beginning where there's people coming to buy Neo's code and they go to some weird party and Dragula's playing and they have metal coming out of their face. Like, holy hell, could you make this any more lame? It's just the ultimate, like, I've thrown this word around a couple times already. It's the ultimate edgelord fantasy. Just like, yep, we're going to the underground party in our trench coats, taking these weird drugs and listening to Rob Zombie with metal coming out of our face. That was so bad. It was so hard to watch and not just laugh hysterically at.
Can't argue with that.
Yeah, I also love the scene you were talking about, the action scene, especially like the construct kind of program before it, where it's like, we need guns, lots of guns. And then just like all these racks of like guns just like fly by by them. And like, I thought that was super cool. And that just kind of that imagination of like, oh, anything you want, we can like spawn it into this world. And yeah, that scene was just amazing. Like, they go through the metal detector. It's like, oh, please remove all like metallic objects. And then it's just like, damn.
Oh, yeah.
They're like stacked. So I thought that was awesome. The slow motion is like a little like lame that they did. That doesn't really like hold up. And I hate,
we've seen
Zack
it so
Snyder.
Much now.
Is that what, is that the name of the director that does that in like all his movies? Watchmen and stuff. I think that's
I don't remember the
I
name.
I think he's the director that he loves doing that slow motion
stuff.
Like the
stuff. John Woo style. And,
yeah, but yeah, that slow motion stuff I think doesn't hold up. But for its time, it was like the coolest thing ever. And there's a reason why we saw it for so many years after. But other than that, like, there's just so much memorable dialogue that I love. You know, like, even like you hear like, follow the white rabbit, people will say, but like the whole, what if I told you? And there's so much memorable stuff about this movie. And it's still very prevalent in pop culture to this day. So, I mean, you guys may not have liked the pacing, but like I said, that was actually one of the things I appreciated the most, is that it never slowed down and it just kept going. And I think there's some movies that just drag on certain scenes and you're like, whatever. So it's like, I'd rather them go fast on things than to like to let things breathe if it's not going to work. You know what I mean?
For me, I got to say that my favorite thing is the dialogue, particularly Morpheus, because he is, I'm just visualizing the character, like when he's off screen, just like, how can I blow Neo's mind? Like, how can I say this in such a way? It's like, what if I told you that, you know, when the time comes, you don't have to dodge the bullets? You know, why are my eyes tired? You've never used them before. Whoa. He's just the ultimate mind-blowing character. And I love that for it because Neo speaks like a pretty normal guy. He's just a dude. Like, he really is. But then Morpheus and Neo are like in two completely different movies put together, yet it works. Because it sort of points out that Morpheus is this ultimate phenom, almost. That this
mythological,
that's the word I'm looking for, character, in the way that he talks, because he always talks in his tone. And I'm going to tell you what you have to do now, but when the time comes, you'll already know what you have to do. Mm-hmm. Even when you talk about the Oracle, you know, when we first hear about, oh, Neo, maybe you're not the one. Later on in the movie, he says, you know, basically like, she told you what you wanted to hear. Which to me is like, I would have liked a little bit more detail because I think that's too ambiguous for that scene. That was like a big moment,
I
right?
I think it made sense. I really think that made sense, is that she told him the right thing. Like, because if she told him he was the one, then that might have like, it was a mind game thing. She told him he wasn't the one so that he could kind of let go of that pressure and then actually become the one. Mm-hmm.
See, for me, I get that part, but I didn't feel like the character was at a point where he would have been okay with that. Like,
it was because he ate the cookie.
That's true.
Has to be.
But I would have just felt like, well, if I'm not the one, what do I really need to go through all this? Like, that's how I felt at that point. I felt like he needed to be pushed just a little bit more at that point. But once again, I'm just nitpicking. But I love the theme. I love the tone, the palette of the movie. If you look at it, it's very monotone, visually speaking. There's not a lot of colors, but I love that when we first have...
Well, there's a lot of green, obviously.
That's a really small detail that I picked up at the beginning, was that if you look at the entire office building, everything kind of has that hint of green to it. The entire
there's a very green filter.
Yeah.
Especially pre waking up in the Matrix
and
world.
Like going back and watching it and having that knowledge, you could almost see like, okay, they're leaning into this being a simulation before they even told you that, from that green.
Yeah. But then when he first meets Morpheus, what color are those chairs? It's like this sharp red, right? Like bright red.
I didn't pick up
big
on that
contrast.
One.
Yeah.
Well, it's the red pill. Maybe, you know, like that thematically.
He's like, man, if I get one of them blue chairs, I mean, he may be persuaded. No, I got to go all red, man. The woman in the red dress is what, huh?
Yeah. Huh.
Interesting.
There is kind of a theme to that. But kind of going off of things making you think, I think, even just saying think again, but they did a very good job with kind of, in funny ways, bringing up some of these interesting questions. Like, I love when the Oracle says oh, don't worry about the vase, and then he turns and knocks over the vase, and then she's like, oh, the thing that will really kind of burn your brain is later on when you're gonna thinking about, if I never mentioned the vase, would you ever even have broken it? And you're just mind is blown. And I also love, I think the guy's name was Mouse, he didn't really say much, but there's that scene where they're eating and he's like how did the machines know what tasty wheat tastes like? And he's like, maybe they just didn't know the taste of chicken, and that's why chicken tastes like everything. Like, they kind of bring up those questions of how do the machines know to make this taste like that or this smell like that? And they don't have to fully explore it, but I love that they kind of address that question.
And even at one point in the movie where they're trying to escape, Neo sees the black cat. And then at one point he says, oh, deja vu. And everybody stops in panic.
That was a great moment.
What do you see?
Just this little thing that we think of in our daily lives. Oh, I'm just feeling deja vu. No, this is real bad. We need to deal with this right now.
Deja vu usually means the agents are changing something. And that's a cool thing that it's if you have deja vu in your life, you're like, oh my God, there's been a glitch in the Matrix, you know?
It's the little details. And I guess the last, maybe not part of the story itself, but the world. how ironic is it, at least for me, I want to get your thoughts about this, that we're talking about the Matrix as this world within a world that confines all human beings. And then we have the real world, which has like Zion, which, you know, we didn't really see the underground city in this one. We very much got to see it later on, which I think it was like, oh, I was let down by that in future movies.
Definitely.
That's not what we're here to talk about. But even though we talk about the masses, it's a very empty movie. Like, I always felt like, wow, this movie really is about Agent Smith, Morpheus, and Neo. Even though we're talking about millions and millions of people and saving the world, it's like, is there much to save? Because this movie really doesn't portray it all that much. I'll give you a specific example. You know, the first time they go back into the Matrix after Neo is already part of the team and stuff like that, you know, they're like in a limousine or something. And then they go past one of the places that he had eaten there before. But even the fact that they don't show the place, they only show you Neo inside the car with like a blurry background. And it's like, oh, it would have been nice for me if they actually showed the place. But they wanted to sort of deliver the message so far that, hey, that's not real. So why even bother showing it to you? I think they did it to such an extreme level where I felt like nothing was real. I felt like there's only three people I need to care about and everything else is almost an afterthought.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, thinking about going back at the time, that's what I thought of Zion. Like, oh, maybe it's not this actual real place, because they're leaning into that so hard in, with everything else in the movie. Then apparently there's this city with millions of people potentially that's like this last bastion of human hope. Well, what if it's not actually real? What if that's just something that they've heard of that they're fighting for, or that's something to believe in, almost kind of an extension of Morpheus and his belief in Neo? And then, yeah, they kind of didn't follow through with that with the later movies.
Yeah, I think the only thing that kind of holds it up that lets you know Zion is real is, I think, the tank guy, that character, and another character, they were like born, I think they were born in Zion because they were like human, they were born in the real world, basically. So I think that helps like the validity of Zion. But I do think that the whole Matrix thing, like you said, Juan, where they really don't... they don't make it feel like very populated, even though there's kind of crowds of people. They don't really put a face to people who are still kind of stuck in the Matrix. Is maybe it was just a choice to not have you be really sympathetic to the Matrix so that you would want to see it kind of destroyed so that everyone can wake up. But if they kind of really had showing happy families and stuff in the Matrix, you would maybe be more sympathetic towards, maybe it's not a good idea to destroy it. Maybe it's better to leave people happy, something like that. And instead, I think in the later movies, they want you to, they have you more sympathetic towards the people in the real world, and you want to see the real world survive.
Any thoughts about the Oracle? We've talked about when she reveals that, you know, he's not the one, but the actual concept of, and this was a little bit confusing to me, you know, so Morpheus is in the real world. They go to the Matrix to talk to the Oracle, you know, in the fake world about real events. I thought that was a little weird because I don't know about you guys, but I thought like, well, I mean, she's got to be somewhere in the real world. I guess at Zion, or maybe that she would have been in. But that would have been like a perfect scenario of like, why are you going back in when you've been building up the fact that you got to get out of it? I thought that was a little weird.
I'm not necessarily sure the Oracle is even, like, I feel like she's woken up, but she's not, like, actually physically woken up in the world. Like, maybe it's, like, she knows everything, but she's never actually, like, woken up out of, like, the tank thing or whatever. And I don't think they ever address that either.
And not only that, but there's those kids around her as well that they're kind of implying that, like, with the whole spoon scene and everything, like... you're left wondering.
There is no spoon.
Yeah, oh, right. There was no spoon. But you're wondering, like, oh, are these people that are on another ship or something? Or what's going on here?
I don't know if they're necessarily woken up either, but they're obviously people who are... I guess they... they have to be, right? Yeah, if they're, like, doing all these mind-bending
tricks. Yeah, they have to be woken up.
Yeah, the kids have to be woken up. But yeah, I think they even mentioned how Neo, like, normally they don't wake people up when they're, like, much older. So that's why it's like you had all the kids there who were candidates to be the one. And that's why Neo is, like, by far the oldest one there. But that's interesting. Yeah, we don't really know, like, what other ship. I mean, we assume there's other ships. Zion's a very populated city. So there must be other people who are plugging in from different locations.
And once again, I know that in later movies, something like the Oracle and even the things that we're talking about, they do go into more detail. And unfortunately, the actor that portrayed the Oracle actually died. So in later movies, they had to change the person. You know, they justified it. Like, I forget what it is, but, you know, she changed her image for X or Y reason. But I think that within the confines of this movie, they wanted to build up such a big deal about all these characters that all are all high and mighty. But we know so little about them. So for me, it was like, well, how do I know you're the real deal when I don't really know where you come from? But I guess that's just maybe me overanalyzing things. And Keith, you mentioned that one of your favorite things is the fight scenes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the movie, we have the things that Neo quickly learns jiu-jitsu, kung fu. You know, we get the battle music. I think, like, this corner of the movie is what people always talk about in a funny way, as Ryan mentioned, because we've made memes about the music. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I was listening to this. Whenever the battle music would play, I would almost start laughing because it's so funny to poke at now, back in the day.
Yeah.
You okay, Keith?
Oh, yeah. You know, I just went into Matrix battle music mode. It's just ingrained in my head now.
It's a glitch.
It must have been a glitch. Did somebody feel deja vu somewhere? Agents are doing something.
A little bit. Something happened. Mm-hmm.
But kind of two fields of thought here. The gun play, I thought, was wonderful. The kung fu stuff, which everybody remembers, I was not a big fan of. It came off very lame to me. Even going back to the fight training scene between Neo and Morpheus, it seemed super lame. And especially, it's really, really, really hard to get past that line of, I know kung fu.
Dude, it's so good.
It's so lame.
It's legitimately good.
I love it.
He just looks at somebody.
I love Keanu Reeves and his one-liners.
It was just, I broke out laughing at that because it's just so bad. But the gunplay, I love so much. The choreography of it, wonderful. The kung fu, the martial arts scenes just got lamer and lamer as the movie went on, in my opinion. Especially that one where at the end where Neo's just like one hand just moving
so fast that it's blurred.
So cheesy.
That was so like, that's where like the DBZ, I really felt the DBZ aspect. Yeah. I thought that was actually pretty cool because, you know, you showed that progression of like, how difficult it was to fight the agents. And then when he gets fully woke, you know, he's able to just like dodge everything. But yeah, some of the fight stuff was a little on the comedic side. There was definitely some really over the top stuff at like that subway scene at the end when he's fighting the agents. And I can't remember which part, but probably the most hilarious thing besides like Keanu Reeves doing all of his kung fu poses was pretty funny. But I think the funniest part in the fight scenes is like Neo like throws his fist out, it gets blocked, and then he like extends his hand and hits the guy in the throat. Like that was hilarious. So like stupid. I was laughing a lot at that. That was hilarious.
That was good stuff. That was good stuff. But I think it was fun. As Keith mentioned, I think a lot of older fight movies stand the test of time better than this one, because this one, they wanted to sort of combine the jiu-jitsu, the kung fu, with the actual Matrix, and it sort of becomes a parody of the fighting. I remember in the training scene, he's doing like all these side attacks, and maybe like, I'm not a kung fu guy, I'm not a jiu-jitsu guy, I don't know about any of this stuff, but it looked weird. I'm not saying it looked funny to me, but it didn't look like a real fight. And I wish it would have been a little grittier. Even though the Matrix looks dirty, all the fighting looks super clean in comparison. But yeah. I think that it does the job, because more so than the fighting, it is more about Neo learning and quickly adapting. And we get that in the movie. And I think that that's really, you know, what they really wanted to set out to do. So we've talked about some of the best things, some of the things that are not necessarily great. Is there anything else that you think being very critical about the movie is just like, man, this does not hold up? Keith, I'm already watching your face.
1999 just technology. Some of the whole, like, yeah. Hey, remember payphone? Remember when you pulled out a cell phone and it, like, flipped down like that? Yeah. Oh, God, just some of that stuff doesn't hold up. Or the interpretation of 90s computer hacking. And this is where that style really got its tone set from The Matrix, of the black background and the green characters just coming down from the top of the screen. Like, all of that stuff just, ooh, that was tough to look at. The payphones, I think, were the most dated standout thing there, where it's like, oh man, you'd be lucky. Imagine trying to get out of the Matrix in 2018. Like, I need to find a payphone. Oh God, I need to walk 18 blocks just to find one.
That's actually, like, that's the thing my girlfriend and I were joking about after we watched the movie, was like, oh man, if we're stuck in the Matrix, we're screwed. Like, yeah. Where are we going to find a landline or a payphone? Like, that's kind of the irony of this movie, is that it's like very much like kind of technology based, yet like they have such a reliance on dated technology, such as payphones, landlines, and like really dated like cell phones. So that's just like the funny thing about it. But obviously it's like technology movies, no matter what, they're gonna get dated eventually. But like, I think it still holds up pretty well, all things considered. You know, like, if you can get past those things, I think the whole story itself and the characters still hold up.
Yeah, I agree. I think that when you move the technology aside, I think that this movie for you, Keith, for example, it's not your style, because even when you talk about the Wachowski brothers and you look at, you know, their historical piece in the films industry, it's a very acquired taste, and people like these movies or they hate them. And even like I mentioned, Morpheus, I love the way that he speaks. But I know there's a lot of people that hate it, because it's like, talk like a damn human being, man. You're a real human being. Why are you talking like this? He's not a computer, yet he damn near talks like one. But that disconnect between the characters and the way they talk, that's what I loved about the movie. But I definitely think that the technology and some of the fight scenes don't hold up as well as other things. Now, the quick question for you guys. Should they have stayed with only the first movie? We're not here to talk about the second or the third one. But knowing that those do exist can be a detriment to this movie, because think about the fact that we've talked about Sion. You know, we don't see it in this movie, but we see it in other ones. We talked about the romantic stuff. They definitely went into that. So most of the things that we're asking about did happen. Yet the reception was, hey, maybe it would have been best if that didn't happen.
Yeah.
What say you guys?
I mean, like you guys said, some things are better left unsaid. So I don't think the fact that these later movies exist is a bad thing. But when you explain too much, sometimes it's to the detriment of your product. Like, I think we could have gone without seeing Zion ever, and just knowing that it's this big city filled with just the last hope of humanity. It would have been A-okay without that, but if you over-explain things, then you give too much, you give people too much of what they want. And I think that's kind of where things fell apart in the later movies of The Matrix. Now, do those movies bring this one down? Absolutely. But I do think it's strong enough, even beyond all of my criticisms, that this movie is strong enough to stand on its own if you just want to go back and watch the first Matrix movie.
Yeah. So with this movie, I mean, given the fact that it did so well in the theaters and on video, whatever, they were going to make sequels no matter what. They really made this movie in kind of the mindset that they left it open to have sequels. So it was going to happen. We were going to get that trilogy. But as Keith said, this movie does really stand on its own. And I think having it best left to the imagination of, hey, what's going to happen next? Does Neo destroy the machines? Whatever you come up with in your mind is generally going to be better than what the other two movies eventually presented. Yeah.
And we got a bunch of stuff. And I think that they themselves probably did not expect the movie to become as popular as it did, because we got the trilogy, We had the Animatrix series. It was a series or movie. I forget. I haven't watched it in a long
time.
The
Animatrix or something?
What?
Wasn't it called like the Animatrix?
Yeah. It's like an anime type thing. We had the Enter the Matrix game, which sort of does like side stuff. You know, it's not focused on Neo and it's more about the later movies. We also had the Matrix, the Path of Neo game, which is available on Xbox and I believe PlayStation 2.
Yes.
We also had a Matrix MMO. So this spawned a world.
Oh my God, the Matrix Online. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That really should have been the perfect MMO, but it didn't hit. Because really, when you think about the concept of the Matrix itself, it is an MMORPG.
Yeah, but I guess they sort of tried to go too deeply into this and they burnt it out. I mean, they burnt it hard. We haven't seen, as to my knowledge, there's no new Matrix thing being worked on. So even though there is a legacy thing, you know, from the very beginning of this episode, we talked about the fact that this movie left a lot of things. You know, you talk about a game like Max Payne, for example, that has a lot of slow motion elements. And I guarantee you that happened because of something like The Matrix. Is there anything else that you think that when you talk about the legacy of this movie, not the trilogy, you always got to look back at and appreciate this was made possible. This is still relevant today, thanks to The Matrix.
Hackers wouldn't have trench coats if it wasn't for The Matrix. They wouldn't have an entire fashion style.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, I knew growing up in high school, there were the, like, not to talk crap about anyone, but, like, there were kids that loved wearing trench coats and stuff. It's not really as fashionable today, but it was definitely something that was thought to be cool. Like, I've seen, you know, you see kids who, like, dressed up as Neo for Halloween, and you're just like, man, that costume hasn't aged well or whatever.
No.
But it was very cool for its time. It inspired a lot of different action effects that we saw for many, many years. I think everyone definitely got burnt out on it, but there was so much parodying of this, and I think that's part of the reason why public perception of like these kind of effects is now laughable, and why we were probably laughing at a lot of points in this movie, because these things got parodied again and again, whether it was Scary Movie, whether it was Shrek. I know there was a ton of other movies that also parodied
every
the
single
Matrix,
video even game, like, from 1999.
Yeah, so many video games
today.
Conker's Bad Fur Day had a whole section about like the Matrix stuff, where they were in the whole like construct training program, and they even had a like basically a direct recreation of that like building scene with all the guns, and you're jumping from like pillar to pillar before you go on the elevator. So Conker's Bad Fur Day, like, I mean, they unabashedly ripped off a bunch of movies in that game, but there was a ton that they took from The Matrix. Mm-hmm.
And I think to that point, that's one of the biggest challenges of going back and watching The Matrix today, is that you really need to separate yourself from this is what the movie is and this is what pop culture took from it. Because some of the stuff today is laughable, but it was one of the first movies, if not the first in some cases, that really made these things popular. So while society has really just beaten it to death, it's very innovative that way, and you have to recognize that if you want to go back and appreciate The Matrix today.
Yeah, and another thing I wanted to bring up is just the fact that, like, you know, a movie is great and really has a legacy if, like, you still hear quotes to this day, and which you do. Like, people, there's still Matrix references all the time. Like, it still holds up, and that's the sign of a really great movie. Because you can look at a movie like Avatar, the one with, like, the blue people, and it's like, yeah, you know, that was big when it came out, but it's like, who the hell still talks about that movie? But then you think of the other movies that really have that legacy that are still brought up to this day. Like, even people bring up like the term like red pilled, like means like, oh, they like woke up and like realized something. So like all, there's still very much a lot of that. Like, there's the Morpheus memes that you still see, like all of that is still very relevant to this day, even if some things definitely like don't hold up in the same way.
And I think another piece of the puzzle that we sort of overlook, you know, we had a Hackers movie. I think it came out in 96. We brought it up on the 90s movie trends episode. But that movie, Yeah, the hackers were sort of portrayed to be kind of cool, but they were very lame, especially when you look, you know, back now. But here's a hacker in his bedroom, and then his turn is to save the world now. I mean, think about that shift,
right? And his real name becomes his screen name. Like, I think that's the most overlooked part. Like, they took this guy's name, wiped it out, and then now he's not no longer his legal name. He is now Neo. Morpheus is Morpheus. Trinity is Trinity. And that's probably, honestly, one of the biggest legacies of this movie, in the way you see more and more people's screen names becoming their actual names, especially in things like esports, where it's not Curtis that plays Dota, it's Fishface 420 that's making the crazy top plays.
I don't know. Ninja's real name.
I have some bad news for you,
Keith. What would your Matrix name be? It would be like Darth Canada.
Darth Canada XXX Sniper.
Triple X. XXX at the beginning, XXX, yes. XXX at the end.
Small X, big X, small X.
69.
Under dash.
Yep. We got to really throw it all the way back there, but I'm very happy that we got a chance to talk about this movie. You know, whether some of us liked it more than others going back, I think you can't doubt the impact
100%.
That this movie had. Like, this is what the show was about. You know, we've had internal conversations. If you notice, we've selectively been talking about the good stuff, A Link to the Past, The Matrix for better or worse, but impact leaves its way for not so great things, not so great games and movies. So those are going to eventually be happening. So everybody listening, everybody watching, if you have any ideas, suggestions for things that you would like us to talk about, if you've been watching and subscribing and you've left the reviews, you know that we have this format. On a bi-weekly basis, we have the extended episodes, including A Link to the Past in this one. But in the weeks between, we have your favorite episodes about Super Nintendo games, favorite games, I should say, and the 90s trends in the world of movies. So we have two different vessels, if you will, that can really help, you know, sort of segment things so we can talk about all sorts of stuff. So having said that, Mr. Poshik, what are we going to be talking about within the next couple of months?
Well, come November 18th, we're going back to our wrestling roots and taking a deep dive into WrestleMania 14, the beginning of the Attitude Era. I'm really looking forward to this episode. It should be fun, honestly, just to talk wrestling with you guys again, something that we haven't really done in a while. And then
crazy,
right? And then going into December 2nd, going back to the video games, probably one of the most innovative, groundbreaking games of the PlayStation 2 era. We're going to go take a look at Grand Theft Auto 3. Now, by the time this has come out, I've put in a couple hours of Red Dead. Into Red Dead 2. I strongly believe that game would not happen if it wasn't for Grand Theft Auto 3. So we're going to take a look back and just see how far that has come in the time period since then. Then finally, it's December 16th. That we're going to call this our holiday special episode because it's as close to Christmas as we're going to get. We're going to look at the holiday classic Home Alone.
Yes, the very first one.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I have some fond memories of this movie. I don't know if they're going to be fond by the end of that episode.
I watch that movie at least once a year. What say you, Mr. McNulty, about the upcoming gen, the agenda of A Cast of the Past? You excited?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. Like Keith said, it'll be interesting for all of us to talk wrestling again, considering it's been well over a year now. And then Grand Theft Auto 3, I got to get started on that. I'm looking forward to playing that again. I'm a big fan of the Grand Theft Auto game, so I'm super excited for that episode. And Home Alone, that's a movie I haven't seen all the way through in quite a while, though I did watch a good chunk of it about a year ago. So just, again, similar to The Matrix, being able to just watch that all the way through, really get the full context and kind of formulate my opinion. All three of those are going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
I actually started playing Grand Theft Auto 3 about a week ago. I'm playing it on the PS2, because that version's the one that I played back in the day, but never beat it. So now I'm doing that, you know, piece by piece. In case I do stream it, you know, you guys can check me out over at twitch.tv/PressPauseTV. Don't forget that Keith has a wrestling podcast called The Six Pack Challenge, my friend.
And you can find that over at Six Pack Challenge on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. If you'd like to follow our wrestling endeavor on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at Six Pack Cast.
Yeah, and Ryan McNulty, he has a Twitch account that he needs to give a little bit of a massage, but it is twitch.tv/TheRyanMcNulty, and don't forget A Cast of the Past across all social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Send us an email, acastofthepast@gmail.com. And folks, we are officially, as of this recording, available on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes/Apple Podcast, and we should be available on most other podcasting platforms. Whether you consume the content on YouTube or through audio only, it would greatly help support us if you could drop a review. You know, be honest about this. If you like the show, if you like the experience, remember, you can search A Cast of the Past and click on that familiar sword and stone logo and get the word out.
Indeed. Like I say, guys, on the other show, if you do like this show, give us an RVD-style frog splash, baby. 5 stars.
And if you don't know about wrestling, an RVD-style frog splash, that sounds wrong. That sounds nasty, actually, Keith. So I don't think that works here, but thank you for watching and supporting. And until next time, stay tuned for a lot more on A Cast of the Past. Go back to the catalog, check out A Link to the Past, check out 90s movie trends, and favorite Super Nintendo games on YouTube and podcast apps. Take care. See you next time, gang.